Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with bonkers.ie, Ireland's favourite comparison and switching website. Visit bonkers.ie today and start saving on your household bills.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. 51551 is our text number. We started yesterday's programme, or dealt in yesterday's programme, with some of the fallout from the budget. And Carol has contacted us. Anne lives in South County Wexford, originally from Glasnevin in Dublin. Anne, good afternoon.
Good afternoon,
Bill. You want to begin about your issues with the budget. You say the rural-urban divide has been made. That chasm has widened because of the budget. Why?
Yeah, so just to make the point, I'm a...
Well, obviously the phone lines aren't even working, or the mobile phone line isn't working. What Anne is saying is, we'll try and get a better line there, Anne. What Anne is saying is they moved to South County Wexford in 2006, just before the crash, and she loves the whole idea of living in the country, originally from Glasnevin. Her husband is from that particular area, and she was reacting also to this particular clip in all the debates this week about the Extinction Rebellion and green issues. She was reacting also in contact about this comment by the leader of the Green Party, Eamon Ryan, TD.
There's no reason in rural Ireland that we couldn't have a scheme. Let's in a local village where, you know, there's 200 or 300 families, let's have 30 cars which we share. There'll always be one available. Maybe it's a short walk down to pick it up. You know, this is...
A lot of country roads at 8 o'clock in the morning? Really? Or deputy?
Yeah. I mean, why not, you know, you could cycle down to the local collection point. We all don't have to... on pure economics alone, in terms, you know, we're all worried about how much this is costing, and we should be. There are ways we can do it and reorganise and do things differently.
Anne, I don't know what your line is like now, but I'll proceed. Basically what Eamon Ryan is saying, with a bit of community cooperation, the number of cars needed in rural Ireland could be, for a village of 300, could be down to 30. What do you think of that, Anne?
I don't think he's actually living in the same part of the country that I am, Joe, because as far as I'm concerned... we are literally forgotten about when it comes to any type of proper network in terms of transportation.
Could there be carpooling with apps and smartphones?
No.
Could there be carpooling in rural areas?
Absolutely not.
Why not?
Not where we live anyway. Like, for example, my son, for him to go to school, it's 7 miles. There's no bus. Mm-hmm. The people that would live on either side to me don't have school going children.
Okay.
And I would only be one of God knows how many thousands that are in that boat. Likewise, my daughter, who's in secondary school, has to travel 20 miles plus a day to get to her secondary school. We actually pay €900 to a bus company to actually mm-hmm. get her there. For the school year. So, like, there isn't any network in terms of transportation where we live.
And why did you move from Glasnevin to South Wexford?
Yeah, we moved in 2006. Mm-hmm. My husband would have been in the building trade. And to be honest with you, there was two factors primarily. The first one was the pure economics of it, in that although we would say that 2008 was the crash, things had started to slow even in 2006.
Okay.
And we felt that with the humongous mortgage that we had in Dublin at that time, that it was a viable option to try and move to Wexford, which is where my husband is from. So that was one part of it. And then secondly, it was also the lifestyle and the opportunity to raise our children in, like, such a lovely setting.
And have you changed your mind given the challenges you spoke about there? I'm sure, obviously we heard the other challenge a few minutes ago about mobile phone reception. I'm sure broadband reception is equally as difficult.
Look,
but have you changed your mind then?
I actually have to travel about 6 miles with a laptop and a dongle for my daughter to do her homework.
Wow.
You know, so, like, this is a challenge. This is what I'm saying. I actually laugh. It's ludicrous when I hear about this rollout of broadband. I'm living in this house since 2006. We've never had any kind of proper, decent internet connection. you know. And like, if you're really serious about green issues and getting people off the roads, people to work from home, these are the issues that need to be addressed.
And I think Eamon Ryan also said that electric cars are probably more, would even be more attractive in rural areas because of the way the electricity is configured.
I think, right, okay, the whole idea of kind of electric cars sounds very attractive, but being realistic about it, Joe, who's going to have the kind of money that it's going to cost to actually change your car up to an electric in the first instance? And secondly, like myself, because like I still have a mom that lives in Dublin, I couldn't go on a pure electric car. It would have to be some kind of hybrid because I actually probably wouldn't get the full kind of round trip on it.
Okay, the range anxiety.
Yeah, exactly.
But are you tempted to leave rural Ireland? I'm not. By the way, it's an unfair question. It shouldn't be as apocalyptic as that.
I know.
But did you ever say to yourself, "Well, even for the 4 years until the kids finish second level, the children finish second level, I'll go back"?
To be honest with you, Joe, I genuinely have never regretted leaving.
Great. Okay.
I wake up and I'm just so thankful that we were fortunate enough to be able to do the move when we did it. I think the quality of life that you can give the children is like you couldn't beat it. I mean, at the moment, we have part of our garden even designated as a biodiversity garden, whereby it's been given back to the wilderness. So, like, we have plenty of bees and butterflies and all the rest of it that goes with it. And I think just in terms of the quality of life for the children, I don't think you can actually put a value on that.
Okay. So why did you object so strenuously to what Eamon Ryan was saying? He said, he basically said carpool and get together.
Yeah. I just don't think that's a realistic viewpoint. Actually, I would invite Eamon. No problem. I have an extra bedroom down here.
I'm sure he would go down. Let me bring in Joe Murray. Joe is in Wicklow. Joe, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How you doing?
What do you think of what Eamon Ryan said?
I think it's a good idea. If you live in a village that is configured like that and there's people that, you know, are happy to share. I think what Eamon Ryan is doing is bringing some fresh possibilities to the table. Mm-hmm. I think he's been completely, we heard a tiny little clip there of what he was saying, and it's made to sound like he's telling us all to get rid of our cars.
Hang on a minute now. We didn't edit the clip. We didn't.
No. Well, I'm talking about what I managed to see online.
Hang on, what your researchers sent me. Yeah. Well, let's listen to what he said then. If you think, well, you are going to hear it because if you say we're distorting it, that's a serious allegation.
There's no reason in rural Ireland that we couldn't have a scheme. Let's in a local village where, you know, if there's 200 or 300 families, let's have 30 cars which we share. There'll always be one available. Maybe it's a short walk down to pick it up. You know, this is.
Along country roads at 8 o'clock in the morning, really,
or
deputy?
Yeah, I mean, why not? You know, you could cycle down to the local collection point. We all don't have to. On pure economics alone, in terms, you know, we're all worried about how much this is costing, and we should be. There are ways we can do it and reorganise and do things differently.
Cycle down to the local collection point.
No, well, what I heard, Joe, was...
Well, what did you hear?
What did you hear just now? What you just played me right there, the very first line was, why couldn't we have a scheme? What's the possibility? Is there a possibility of it? And the very last thing that he finished off with is that there's always things we can do differently. And he's right. Now, Anne, the similarities between my life and Anne, the previous caller, are actually quite scary. I'm also living rurally. My daughter also has 20 miles to go to school. My mum is also still in Dublin. Mm-hmm. Anne has obviously thought about the same things I've thought about. How can I get rid of, you know, how could I reduce my carbon impact? You know, it hit home to me last summer in the heat wave we had when the stream behind my polytunnel that irrigates my vegetables ran dry. And I decided, right, this is really, climate change is happening and it's affected me, it affected my vegetable growing last year. And I decided to drill down a bit deeper into who was doing what about it. And I've become a bit fanatical, some would say, about watching what our politicians are doing, who is saying what and who is fighting for what. And I can tell you, Eamon Ryan, I'm nearly sick listening to Eamon Ryan. And what I'm sick listening to him say is, how come this government has 51 or 52 car road building projects on the go and not one single public transport scheme on the go? He's like a broken record. So Eamon Ryan isn't stuck up in Dublin with his head in the sand. He is, and I watch him and I listen to him, he is fighting for, you know, some of the things that we badly need in this country.
Okay, and
along with the likes of Breed Smith and a whole lot of, not just Green Party people, but a whole lot of
and
other
you're a
people.
Member, you're a member of the Green Party.
I am, but it's not just Green Party people.
Okay, I know Breed Smith, and what do you think of Eamon Ryan's, that was a proposal, you could cycle down to a local collection point, 30 cars for a village of 300 to be shared.
Right, okay. There's a lot of practicalities around that particular suggestion that if it were to work would need to be ironed out. I think that if he's really going to make something constructive, why don't we flip that and say, right, is there a need for all these kind of diesel guzzling cars to be heading into a city? Why isn't there a better public transport network? You know, like, really, I don't understand why people that are living in rural areas that don't have any options are still paying the same amount of this imposed type of taxation.
Okay, well, can I ask you, what do you think of the suggestion? I got into trouble before when we get into this climate change debate because I asked for examples from people and I was accused of being rude and impartial and all this carry on, or being partial rather than impartial. But what Eamon Ryan has made a suggestion. He said in villages of 300, what about 30 cars, a collection point, people cycle down and share the cars?
Yeah, I just can't see how that would work, Joe, to be honest.
Okay, Cormac Rogers on the line, 51551. Cormac, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe. How are you doing?
Your point, please.
I'm driving here and I had to pull in on the side of the road and listen again. I didn't know this. And I'm there going, hang on, Eamon Ryan, right, okay, so he wants people to carpool. So down the country, we'll say most of the country drivers would be elderly. We'd be driving maybe a little 1 litre Micra or a 1 litre Mazda or something like that into the local shop and back out again. And he's going to, like, we have to compare that with someone who's in Dublin. We say, I was up there last week all around Southside and looking at the amount of big 4x4s, like every make and model under the sun, but all 3 litre engines, 3 litre diesels, 4 litre diesels, big Audis, big Mercs. And from 6 o'clock in the morning till 7 o'clock at night, they're just rolling around into the city, back out again, up to schools, back out again, collecting one child from school, back up, stuck in traffic for about an hour. And so he's comparing that with maybe some Mrs. So-and-so going down to the local shop in her little...
I'm sure Eamon Ryan, the Green Party are against all those gas guzzlers, and that's why the tax with the Green Party changed it when John Gormley, and they argued for environmental reasons, the tax and the VRT on those big Jeeps, and they're extraordinarily expensive. Sure, about half the cost goes back to Pascal Donoghue, goes to the Exchequer.
But the tax was lowered on them. From 08 onwards, like, so we say someone has a 06 1.4-litre car, 1.6-litre car, and the tax is €600. The tax on those big Jeeps now is €300.
On a diesel.
So I know they're using more juice, we'll say, and all the whole lot, we'll say, but stuck in traffic. But it's just ridiculous. Like, I don't know about the VRT, but like
our VRT is the highest in Europe. That's, you often hear people campaigning, well, if we're so ingrained in being European, why don't we have the same taxes? Let me bring Bernard Gold back in. Bernard, good afternoon.
Hi, Jim.
Your point, please.
Yeah, I was listening earlier on the show when people, I guess you had the clip of Eamon Ryan and then the app, you know, and I'm thinking, you know what? Not an app, but he was saying share a car. So it brought back memories I had of standing along the side of a rural Tipperary road, no street lamps, you know, no broadband coverage, no mobile phone coverage. And someone would collect me because I arranged it ahead of time to go 45 miles from Knocklofty County, Tipperary, to the center of Limerick. And I knew that as we drove the route, as this guy drove me along the route, and I'd pay for some of his petrol, that there are dozens of other vehicles doing the same trip with one person in the vehicle and dozens of other vehicles coming at it. So company cars would be making the run between those two large cities on the N24. Some of those company cars would love to have someone to chat or to share a coffee with, if only they could connect with each other through some kind of watering hole, maybe an app. And then I have students where I work. They work for Uber or they work for Lyft. The apps could easily be pivoted to becoming carpooling apps like they can be used in the States. And I could actually be paying somebody to ride to Limerick. Now, that's all kinds of other stickiness with taxi unions and hackneys. I get all that. But if such a viable app was commissioned by Transport Ireland, then me standing along the side of a road, or someone like me, could probably, and I'm thinking of dozens of my students, could probably get a lift into campus instead of having to walk the 4 miles or cycle the 4 miles in the rain. But yeah, the apps don't exist.
Yeah, but we're one of the few countries. Uber, you say Transport for Ireland, official Ireland has decided that Uber will not be allowed to operate. They're banned from operating private car rides in Ireland, full stop.
No, I know. That's a bigger issue, Joe. So I'm just saying, simply take the design pattern of it, ask a third-level institution to re-engineer the design pattern merely as a carpooling app, pay the infrastructure of Transport Ireland to maintain the back end, and you have your solution. I mean, the app is really viable. It doesn't have to be used. They're using it for more than just transport of people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that app is clever. You can be transport of boxes, transport of blood samples.
You don't need a third-level institution to do it. We can get a young scientist from the RDS to do it.
Yeah,
Will Official Ireland step in and say insurance, health and safety, GDPR? Can you imagine?
That's why you could then farm. Let somebody else worry about that. I mean, like, we have startups that can say that's part of the insurance they got to get in just in case they do it wrong. No, the frameworks for GDPR, the frameworks for data privacy, those things can be followed and codified directly into the app. That's not a big problem. It's a false restriction to think that that's why you
don't we have
this.
Why don't we have Uber in Ireland?
Taxi union. But it's a good reason why, Joe. I've gone down this pathway, and like I actually believe that the Uber drivers I know in the States, man, they're running themselves ragged, going for just small pennies.
I know.
It's a zero contract problem. If you go down that pathway,
that exists. You look at the poor, in every sense of the word, Deliveroo, bikers. We've covered it here so often.
Yeah.
The Just Eat, the Herd. Who was on?
Yeah. No,
just let me finish this point. It's in my craw. About 0 hours, Bernard. Like, who was on? Was it Just Eat the other night saying we're extending our offering to 3 o'clock on a Saturday, Saturday night, Sunday morning? And the next question was, we presume your cyclists are going to get paid a premium for walking for 3 o'clock till 3 o'clock on a Sunday morning. And the answer was no.
Yeah, well, Joe,
he should have been booted out of the studio.
We have students that do not have enough petrol in their tank after the end of run for a whole evening delivering Chinese food.
I know.
And now they can't get to school the next day. So that's a problem.
Okay.
So I want to say, don't go down that. That's a bad rabbit hole. Just keep it on. Hey, how about an app to allow people to carpool?
Here. And we'd promote it. Thanks, Bernard Goldback. Ray Keeley is in Dublin, 51551. Ray, you think Eamon Ryan's idea is a good one?
I do indeed, Joe. Anything that cuts down on the
emissions.
Yeah, hydrogen, carbon dioxide and carbon monoxide has to be good. So, yes, I go with that. But a reason I was ringing you, Joe, is nobody's mentioning the big up-and-coming solution to our energy problem in terms of transport, hydrogen.
Okay.
Now, hydrogen, the first car ever made ran on hydrogen, 1842, in London. And the man who invented it was bought out by the big oil companies because they knew it was going to boom. Now, we're now in a situation where we have to stop using fossil fuels.
Yeah.
And we're now talking about using electric cars, which are a waste of time because they don't do what they're supposed to do. Now, I'm talking from experience. I was in the electric truck business myself, and I got out of it because it was a failure.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we have hydrogen available in the filling stations, it does exactly the same as diesel and petrol, gives you the same distance, it only takes 2 minutes to fill up, same distance and no emissions whatsoever. A little trickle of water out of your tailpipe.
Now, where do I get my hydrogen?
Well, it's already available in Europe. There's a company dealing in Europe called ITM Power, and they're already installing hydrogen stations in Britain. They've been installed big time in America. They're starting to install them in Germany and France. And our government hasn't even mentioned it. you know, it really frustrates me big time when this is in our face.
But if it's that good, it's going to happen anyway, isn't it? If it is a miracle cure, and hopefully it is.
Yeah.
And I see various headlines here. Hydrogen fueled cell vehicles could be a feature at Irish roads by 2023. So there's no need to worry then about. No need to get overly excited about diesel cars and whatever's happened, because they'll be gone anyway. Because these cars are going to be so fantastic.
That's the thing, you see. But my frustration really, Joe, boils down to the fact that the government are not telling us this. They should be.
Why are they not telling us? Like,
I don't know, Joe. I really don't. I mean, I've been on to my local TDs. I've been on to the Department of Environment, and I just get a.
So if I bought a Toyota, what's the hydrogen car in Ireland? Toyota Mirai or something?
Mirai
and the Hyundai Nexo and the Honda Clarity. If I buy one, can I buy a hydrogen car in Ireland at the minute?
You can.
And now, where do I fill up?
Joe, we haven't got them in yet. We haven't got the filling stations yet.
And who manufactures hydrogen, so to speak? Who produces the hydrogen?
Well, ESB can make it very easily. It's easy to make. Now, you can buy a tin or bottles of hydrogen at the moment, but they're only small amounts. But you can make hydrogen very easily. It's in everything. It's
and
in
what
the
do you
air,
think? Okay, and your pardon the pun, but your argument is fueled by the fact that James Dyson last night announced he was shutting down the operation in Singapore, isn't it? He was trying to develop an electric car. He said it's not viable.
There you are. And he's a very intelligent go-ahead man. So the thing is, Joe, it works the same way as a fossil fuel. In fact, hydrogen is the prevalent element of the universe. It's all over the universe.
Is it dangerous? You know, like a number of academics and scientists in Ireland have advocated nuclear power as one of the answers to the emissions problem. Yeah. Now, you know, when you mention nuclear power in Ireland, people go into meltdown. There's no debate tolerated about nuclear power in Ireland. Not one political party would advocate it or even argue in favour of it. But anyway, is it dangerous? That's what I'm saying. If it could have...
Oh, hydrogen?
Yes.
Well, no, it was dangerous originally, yes. And it can be. I mean, the famous, the big... aircraft, what is it called? The biplane, not the biplane.
The
big aircraft.
The blimp. The blimp.
In America. The Hindenburg. That was filled with hydrogen.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. But what's happened in the meantime is they've made it more stable now because they're able to control it better now. They've got better systems for containing it and cooling it and using it. So it's a far more friendly system now than. But you know, petrol is very dangerous as well. Highly dangerous. So, you know, it's no more dangerous than petrol, let's put it that way.
And we've come a long way from the Hindenburg, have we?
Have we?
Because I presume it's still, for to fuel a car, I presume there has to be ignition. It has to be energy produced.
Yeah. Yes, it has to be ignited, yeah. But it's done in such a way, it's done electrically inside the car. So if you go to the Mirai website, you'll see it actually illustrated as to how it works inside the car. So it's very safe. It has to be. It can't be driving cars.
Where is it prominent at the minute? Where is it gaining traction?
Well, certainly California, the West Coast of America is taking. It's going in big time in there.
Okay.
And you know, the man behind it in that point was Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Okay.
Yeah, he got hydrogen off the ground over there. There's a thinking man. Even though you think he isn't a thinking man, he is a thinking man.
Yeah, okay. Stay there for a sec, Ray. Let me bring Danny in. Danny Hoare is in Arkle. Danny, your point, please.
Joe, good afternoon to you. Yeah. Joe, I'd just like to make a point here where we have our government telling people to carpool and wanting another use public transport and everything else. It amazes me why do the Dublin-based TDs and ministers going to work in the Dáil, not use public transport in Dublin to get to work.
Some of them save on the massive expenses that they're all on.
And it would improve their carbon footprint.
Yeah, some of them do, apparently.
But not them all.
Eamon Ryan cycles. Joan Borton takes the bus even when she was a minister. She was taking the bus down the Navan Road and through Stony Batter. But do you think that would make it, like... First of all, are you suggesting that the TDs from every constituency travel together in the one car up to Dublin?
Yes, exactly, and that as well. There's a lot of them down around Wexford, there in Scarthy and everything else. They all go up to the Dáil.
They all live in different parts of the
country, should be all carpooling.
But Danny, we won't spend much time on it, but is that realistic?
Of course it's realistic, Joe. They all have to be in the Dáil at the same time.
Yeah, but they'll all be in the cars and they're on the phone and they're... talking away and...
You turn on the phone and all there and every day when you
no,
see
but you, if you're in a... Anyway, just I'm saying, if you're in a car with your four opponents from the same constituency and you're getting a house or trying to get a house or trying to convince Mrs. Maguire that you're getting her a house...
They're all together anyway. It doesn't matter who they are, what party they are. They're all playing games up there. Let's face it.
Okay. Oh, Danny, have you given up, Danny?
I've given up, Joe, because they're all playing games.
Why have you given up?
Well, you see them all there. They're all in each other's pocket from time to time. Mm-hmm. I see it in local areas and everything else as well.
Mm.
So, you know, like, people are not stupid anymore. Like, they can see through these people. The older you get, the more you see through people.
Yeah, but do you not think we've such a breath now of voices and political parties, and they all get, especially at election time, they all get equal time. If they don't get equal time, they're on to Broadcasting Complaints Commission looking for equal time. You know, do you not think it's a very vibrant democracy? I know you're fed up, and I'm sure there's many good reasons you're fed up, but you know what I mean?
People work hard all their lives, Joe.
I know that.
And then they're penalised when they retire. Like, you know, it's absolutely disgusting what's going on in the country. Like, you know, you Pascal there the weekend telling people, oh, it's because of Brexit and everything else. Now, you know, if this Brexit thing goes through and it's all okay, is he going to revert back, giving people money?
Danny, that is the question that was bouncing through my little brain since yesterday evening when we had the pathways to peace, the pathways to a solution statement. Does that mean all the tax cuts they promised to the hard-pressed middle-income people will actually happen?
Yes, that's what I'd be hoping. And the other thing, or is it to pay for the mistakes they made with all the overruns?
Okay. All right, Danny. Thanks indeed. Mind yourself, Danny. That's Danny Horan-Arkler. Patricia Finn. Patricia, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Your point, please.
My point is, I would challenge Eamon Ryan to come down to the heart of the countryside.
Yeah, but that's not the answer either. What is your opinion of his?
My opinion is that I don't think it's very practical in the winter months, most especially living out in the countryside on unlit roads and where there are lots of potholes and that, to get on the bicycle, even if you're well lit yourself. You know, it's very difficult, especially on a wet and windy, dark morning and the same in return in the evening time. You know, it's not practical. You're supposed to go to work wet all day, you know, mm-hmm. and everybody, we all, because we live in these rural, small areas, people go in different directions to their place of work. You know, not every, like some people would work in the rural areas, but they wouldn't be going in the same direction as other people. You know, because there's an awful lot of small nooks and crannies down in the countryside, and people wouldn't be able to always get to these points easily. And like you could have uphill and down dale, as they say, and then a few potholes as well. And then you have to think about safety as well. You know, how safe is it? And how safe is it for anybody? Like, and then if you were seeing maybe somebody, as I said, you can't see because the roads are dark, but there could be somebody viewing somebody else. And like, you never know what could happen to a person. You know, has all that been considered?
Well, what do you think? Well, you considered and you say it just wouldn't work.
Well, I don't think it would work for a lot of people.
Cycle down to a local collection point.
Well, yeah, but like the local collection point, they're talking about villages of 300 or more. In a lot of villages, you wouldn't have actually 300 in very small.
Okay.
Tiny.
Okay. That's Ray Keely, just before you go, I mentioned the Hindenburg and hydrogen and worries of explosions.
Yeah.
I don't know whether I recall this incredible radio report, as it was on your radio at the time, of the Hindenburg disaster. I'm not trying to frighten you, Ray. Listen to this.
Man. It's starting to rain again. The rain had slacked up a little bit. The back motors of the ship are just holding it just enough to keep it from... It burst into flames. Get it, Charlie. It's rising. It's rising terrible. Oh, my. Get out of the way, please. It's burning, bursting into flames, and it's falling on the mooring fast, and all the folks agree that this is terrible. This is one of the worst catastrophes in the world. Oh, it's 400 or 500 feet into the sky. It's a terrific crash, ladies and gentlemen. The smoke and the flames now, and the frame is rising to the ground, not quite to the mooring mast. All the humanity and all the passengers speeding around it. I don't do it. I can't even talk to people. His friends are out there. It's a... Oh, I can't talk, ladies and gentlemen.
Honestly, it's just like they're a massive smoking wreckage. And everybody killed.
That was Herbert Morrison reporting on the 1937 hydrogen disaster when the Hindenburg went up. And unfortunately, 36 people were killed, 13 passengers, that's 22 right. crew, yeah. and one worker on the ground. But anyway, Ray, yeah. I'm not trying to frighten you. It's an amazing bit of footage. But you say it's things have changed dramatically.
Oh, hugely.
Okay. Ray, I'm going to leave it at that. We've got to move on. Thanks indeed. Ray Keeley, Patricia Finn, 51551. Let me bring in Anthony Murphy. Anthony, good afternoon. Your point, please.
I was going, Joe, you were talking earlier about would you think that the hydrogen would have been safe driving. I drove cars for years on LPG, liquid petroleum gas, and it was in a cylinder in the back, and I did the boot around the back of a van. Quite safe. And the cars ran on petrol or gas.
And did you say you had hydrogen in your car?
No, it was liquid petroleum gas. So it would be the same principle as pressurized gas, similar to a super-air cylinder.
And it was safe as houses.
Oh, it was, yeah. The only reason they stopped doing it in garages was the petrol cars went more economical when they went to injectors. But you can still get liquid petroleum gas for cars. There's a place in Finglas converter, usually for the big engine petrol cars.
Okay, and what do you think of that? Have you investigated the hydrogen idea?
I've heard about it online. I think it'd be a fantastic idea. It'd be quite. You were just wondering, would it be safe? People would be afraid of it, but it'd be just as safe as the liquid petroleum gas, I'd imagine. It was a pressurised cylinder that was in the back of the car, so it'd more or less have to be worked the same principle, I'd imagine.
Okay. Let me bring in Joe. Joe, you're listening to debate as well. Your point, please, Joe.
No, the roundabout carpooling. Now, we lived in town at one stage, then we moved out the country for 10 years, and we moved back in again out to the town. But carpooling, I don't think it'll ever work 100%. Because I used to carpool 40 years ago, and I had an accident. There wasn't a blame. But before I even got out of hospital after the accident, the people I was carrying had a claim in against my insurance. So once you carry someone in your car, you're responsible for that person. And if you take any money off that person for carrying them, you have to notify the insurance company that you're getting paid for carrying someone. It will affect your insurance. So I don't think, while you had the principle might be good behind it, saying we carpool, there's a lot of other things behind it. Then that one person comes responsible for picking up one, two, three or four people. He'll at different times of the day maybe picking them up. He might have to call to their house to pick them up. And if people aren't organised, the whole pool will just fall asunder.
And you have a point to make about the Green Party when you were in government.
Yeah, I remember when the Green Party, I always drove petrol cars all my life. And in 2012, I changed to a diesel car. And the only reason I changed to a diesel car, because I'm very much into the green and the whole lot, was Eamon Ryan and Michael Noonan at the time, it was all this, go for diesel. Diesel was going to be a cleaner car, going to be a better car, the whole lot. Now, I have that diesel car since. But I will not change it for an electric car. Because I know our network, if everyone changed the electric in the morning, the whole lot would collapse. Because as a young lad, I remember going back when houses were built either late 60s or early 70s. There was a massive power outage. And I think it was the minister at the time, Mr. Tully was his name. He brought in an order that every house after that would have an open fireplace because everyone was caught with the blackout electricity. So electricity is grand if you have enough of power to run it and you have a backup to run it. But if you haven't, there will be everyone in the country would get caught, both at home and on the road. And now we're moving the systems away from oil, which requires more electricity to run your house with the new heating systems. So you can't just totally depend on electricity for everything.
So you're saying that the Fianna Fáil Green government promoted diesel cars?
Yes, because I would have never had a diesel car in my life, but they said that diesel was a better car because it was a cleaner fuel.
Yeah, but how did you... But was there a financial incentive?
No, but because...
Was there tax breaks?
No, because I was going changing the car, we were living in the country and had more miles to drive. You were getting better miles per gallon from your diesel than you would from your petrol. So when you sat down and worked out all the figures, you were going to be putting up a fair amount of mileage in the year. So it would make more sense to run on a diesel car. And not alone that, it was going to be a cleaner fuel. And then the tax was reduced. On the old car I had would have been 1.5 times there the tax on the new car.
I know what you mean. So there was breaks.
So there was an incentive from that point of view. Yes, okay. It was a small incentive that way.
Well,
yes.
Eamon Ryan of the Green Party, he's been, and he's on now anyway. Eamon, good afternoon. Eamon Ryan, TD. Eamon, did the Green Party, I know you're part of a smaller part of a minority part of a Fianna Fáil government, did you promote diesel cars?
No, I wasn't promoting diesel cars. The tax system has changed to try and lower emissions, Joe, and you're right, that did lead to a knock-on effect. That was more diesel cars. And I think the real problem was that what Volkswagen and the other car companies were saying in terms of the other pollutants, nitrous oxides and particulate matter, that they would be able to sort that problem out. We now know that they were lying.
I want to deal with this now. You're saying that you were the Minister for Communications, Energy and Natural Resources, isn't that correct?
It wasn't my own area, actually.
But you're saying, if one area is the green area, it is the whole area of emissions. And thankfully, one of your unique selling points, one of your many selling points. But you're saying you were lied to by the car companies and you fell for it.
Well, no, the advice at the time was from CORE and from all the scientific advice was actually the emissions or changing the system in the way we did was the right way to go.
So the emissions,
lead to a significant reduction in carbon dioxide, but it didn't lead to the expected reduction in other pollutants because the engines, while the car companies were saying that they'd sorted out the problem in terms of other pollutants, it turns out that they hadn't. And that's what happened. And I said I kind of raised the concerns at the time, but as I said, all the advice was actually it will reduce emissions and it will help in that regard.
But the advice from who?
From CORE at the time, the sustainability scientific advice to the government was they looked at it in real detail and said, yeah, it was.
So does this mean climate change advice is unreliable?
Sometimes, Joe, it's such a complex and widespread issue, affects everything. But can I, if I can, Joe, because I really appreciate the chance getting on air just to respond to some of the commentary earlier about carpooling. And listen, I must apologise to people out in the country if I've caused real concern or people kind of saying, God, your man is telling us we're going to have to get rid of our cars. That was not my intent. And actually, I think, I have a sense, Joe, people all in right across Ireland, and particularly rural Ireland, they're really ready to go and do their bit and play our part in terms of tackling climate change. I think people all over the country. And I think it's really important that we bring people with us and that it's every place matters and everyone matters. And we're not, the last thing we want is people wagging their fingers at anyone saying you shouldn't be doing this or you shouldn't be doing that.
Do you stand over these comments which we played earlier? These are the comments you made on TVAM.
And this is where the government does need to step in and invest in public transport, invest in cycling and walking. And when it comes to cars, to start looking at incentivizing things like car sharing. We don't all need to own a car. Most of our cars are sitting in car parks for 95% of the time.
That's very good, I think, in fairness, Deputy, for people living in the city, this idea perhaps of car sharing or cycling to work or using public transport. What if you live in rural Ireland and none of those options realistically are open to you?
There's no reason in rural Ireland that we couldn't have a scheme. Let's say in a local village where, if there's 200 or 300 families, let's have 30 cars which we share. There'll always be one available. Maybe it's a short walk down to pick it up. This is...
Along country roads at 8 o'clock in the morning? Really? Yeah.
Sorry.
Eamon, do you stand over that last idea?
Yeah, no, I do,
idea.
Joe. But I do. And but the concern I have in terms of how, and this has gone viral, Joe, on Facebook and Twitter, the way these things do. And it started off the other morning where someone interpreted that and said, I was saying that you can only have 30 cars in a village or town. And that's not what I was saying. I mean, that would be madness, utter madness. What I was looking to do is say, these schemes are coming. And listen, they're already here in urban Ireland. People will see, Joe, those go-karts you see around the place. There's about 40,000 people involved in that club. In somewhere like Germany, they've got 2.5 people using car sharing. And the only point I was making when the presenter asked me the question there, she was saying, oh, you couldn't work in rural Ireland. To be honest, I don't want to leave. I want to give rural Ireland as much public transport
Absolutely.
And other transport
Everyone
options
does. Everyone
as they
does.
Can.
Peter Lane is in Macroom. Peter, your point, please.
I was listening to what Eamon had to say there, and I can kind of see where he's coming from. But I think my point would be like, that the people like him and think like the ones who leave Dublin, like you're rural. But I'm living in a very nice area here. We have good broadband. Not every place has it, but we have good broadband. We have a very nice area to live in and so forth. We have a state-of-the-art school in the area. But I have to travel best part of 45 miles for work. And there would be a lot of people in this area as well. And I start work during the night time. There's other people stacked in the afternoons and so forth. So it would be somewhat ridiculous, like, to think, like, you know, that we can carpool in our area. It just would not be feasible.
Peter, can I go back on you there? And listen, I'd love to hear someone from that town, because my own mother grew up there, okay. And my grandparents.
Eamon, hang on, Eamon, I'm not turning it into a phone-in with the leader of the Green Party, okay. Seriously. You and rightly so, you get lots of outings on every other programme, rightly okay. So, and you're brilliant, probably one of the best communicators. But just Peter's point is that your idea of carpooling in rural areas, I know it won't be compulsory, but even your idea of mentioning it is ludicrous. I'm paraphrasing.
It is, even from the point, and sorry to interrupt, you know, Eamon, like, but even from the point of my own house, like, myself and my wife, we started work at different times, so we have to have a car each. There is no possibility of each of us that we can get to work in any other way. I have 3 grown-up children. One is working, one is in Cork, one is in Waterford. Sometimes they're living here at home, sometimes they're staying over with friends or something like that. But the point I'm making is that we just could not organise our life around a carpool system. And most of the people in our area here, and I'm sure the same in a lot of other areas in the country, they would be somewhat the same. Because when I, going back to my youth, like we say, we were talking about that time, like, is that having a car at home was a fun thing. The family went for a drive on a Sunday, it was an enjoyable thing to do. But now a car is an essential thing. It's like a work vehicle. It's something that you have to have in any area. It's taken as part, like, you know, that you have to have one, you have to insure it, you have to tax it, you have to maintain it, and it's part of our lifestyle. It's not like it's a necessary that you can say, well, you know, I think I'll do away with that, and I'll just find another way of doing all this. Because there is no other way. I know there's a bus travels through at some stage through here, but the bus service wouldn't be there at the wrong time. Another example, and my children, with their being students at the time, they could tell you that they could get a bus from Cork to Dublin to Cork, for something around 20, 25 euros, because there's a very good intercity rate. But the bus going from Macroom to Cork, to the best of my knowledge, is probably the same price, if not more expensive, and it's only like probably 10% of the journey. So where's the incentive then, like, for a person to start using local transport?
Wow. Joe, can I come back in there?
Yeah.
I fully agree in terms of we need to radically improve public transport bus services in rural towns and villages, and indeed in rural areas widely. And absolutely, that's part of what we need to do. And I fully agree with you, Peter. There's no one saying, or I'm certainly not saying, that, you know, in your circumstance or in anyone's circumstances, you know, maybe having the car is absolutely the best option, or indeed you might have to have two. But I think there's other people, and there's other, particularly maybe younger people in towns and villages around the country, who actually would find but having to have an extra car at home for them would be really expensive. The insurance alone makes it hugely expensive. One of the benefits of having carpooling, and you could put in the centre of the town, as you know, it wouldn't be for all the widest rural area, but let's say if someone in the centre of town, so a town like Macroom, people could walk to it and pick up the car. The advantage of that is that you may be able to have options and have choice that actually helps people. It's not saying you can't do something, it's saying this could actually allow and people save money in the process.
Okay, just want to have you on there, take those points. Just want to have you on there, Eamon. Does the Green Party support the tactics of Extinction Rebellion? Blocking traffic and stopping people collecting children from creches and schools and people going about their work and all that. Do you support that whole thing of blocking?
You're very aware that you'd be worried that you don't want to disrupt people's daily lives, Joe, and you don't want to.
Do you support their tactics?
I do support what
they're... Okay, that they should block streets and bus routes and all that area.
I think because they feel and would argue...
No, I just want to... We know what they feel. Okay. They've been on everywhere, rightly so. We know what they feel. But do you support their tactics? Everyone feels the same.
I have. Okay. And I do. And Joe, and one of the reasons I would is because I've seen them. I've been out there. It's actually you don't want to see the relationship between the guards and the...
I know, they're all... It's like San Francisco in 1968. They're all in love with each other, and it's like Tinder down there. But that's not the point. For the people who are out working every day, who can't cycle the distances because they live so far from their job, they've got to get across a river which divides our city, which only has about 7 functioning bridges as such. You say, fire ahead, Extinction Rebellion. Block as many roads as you want.
Well, I think they're very sensitive to that issue as well, Joe.
And that's why... That's that's why they blocked Pierce Street the other night, the busiest street, the most gridlocked street in the country. They decided to block it even more.
And as I say, I mean, that's a real difficult call, and there and there's real balance.
Would you support it?
I've been supporting Extinction Rebellion, yes.
As a parliamentarian, you support people who break the law.
No, they are breaking the law.
They are breaking the law. Now, this is the argument. By the way, you can't say. And if they don't get what they want after this week, and they don't get enough publicity, which as they say is all they want, if they don't get enough publicity, what should they then do in terms of law breaking to get publicity?
They'll make that call, and I think central to the call will be not wanting to lose public support. Because going back to the point
there's
I was
no,
making,
there,
very,
well, what public support? Person that was on Morning Ireland on Monday, representing Extinction Rebellion, though she didn't say this on Morning Ireland, though in fairness, Audrey found out before the end of the programme, she didn't declare that she was a People Before Profit candidate that stood in the New Ross local election area and got 139 votes, on the same platform, by the way.
Indeed. Yeah. Well, can I go back, Joe, if I can, just to answer your
question? Less than 2% of the vote.
If I can go back to answer your question, go back to what I was saying at the start. We need everyone on board. This is something we're going to have to get people behind us.
Yeah,
and I think people involved in that protest would actually be aware of this, that actually if we just do it as a protest which inconveniences people, then that won't work. My understanding of what they've been trying to do is actually make the point at government buildings and at government
departments. They say they want to do... If they want to do it, they're totally entitled to do it. They say they wanted to commit arrestable offences.
Yeah, that is part
of it. And get publicity, okay.
Yeah,
the Green Party support Extinction Rebellion's tactics. That's my point.
I have been supporting them, yes.
Okay. Let me bring in Mark O'Byrne and Carlo. Mark, your point, please.
Hi, Joe, Eamon. I think, you know, the government would be better off trying to get people from hotels into homes and to stop the extortion amounts of rent people have to pay. Rather than promote Extinction Rebellion, who are, you know, as you said, rightly pointed out, Joe, they're lawbreakers, and I don't support them at all.
Okay.
But back to the earlier point on hydrogen, people are not aware that to produce hydrogen takes an enormous amount of energy. It's very inefficient. And also, to transport it, to make it road legal for transportation, you have to cool that down to -270-odd degrees Celsius. That in itself takes an enormous amount of energy. This inefficiency would, you know, the energy required to produce all this hydrogen and transport it would be better off put into car batteries. Electric cars are much, much more efficient. And hydrogen fuel cells as well also have a finite life. They don't last as long as people like to make out. You know, hydrogen might suit HGV use because batteries are not at that stage where they can give enough energy for trucks and buses at this point in time. But certainly electric cars, the range on them is quite good enough now. You're talking 400 or 500 kilometres.
But the worrying thing is that Dyson pulled out of the electric car project last night. 500 people lost their jobs in Singapore. He said he'd reapply them. But he's abandoned the electric car idea. This is James Dyson's because he said it's not viable. Gail is in Wicklow. Come back in a sec, Mark. Gail, your point, please. Sorry for holding for so long.
Hi. I just wanted to say to Eamon, my bare school run... living in rural Ireland is 57 kilometres a day. That does not include the kilometres my son goes on his bus for. So to get him to the bus, bring my daughters to school, do all the pickups, is 57 kilometres a day. How could you do that without a vehicle?
And can you carpool?
No, because there is not a sinner living anywhere near me going in the same direction.
Let me bring in Elizabeth Dunn. Your point, please, Elizabeth.
Hi, good afternoon. I just listened to the debate there. I'm very interested in the proposal put forward by you.
And where do you live, Elizabeth?
I live in Wicklow Town, again.
Wicklow Town, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not a politician, but I have a very strong interest in rural development in particular and in economic development and in sustainability. But my point is this, that in relation to the carpooling thing, I think it's great to get a debate going on it. It's a good idea. I can see that there's a huge amount of practicalities around that, the logistics. Having been a grandmother of 10 children, the majority of them being under the age of 10 years of age, there are 3 sets of cars going to schools every day, as this other lady Gail has pointed out there. One of my children has 4 kids, so I can't see any carpooling, you know, attempt being effective. I think it would take a lot of debate and, what say, consultation with
and
people.
And even with smartphones and apps, Elizabeth, would that help?
Yeah, I think it would. I think there was a gentleman on earlier on, and he made the point about, and you actually said it yourself about the young scientists. I think that going back to the point that Greta Thunberg was trying to make, it's great to get the debate going. And she made the point that, and she says, our future, you've stolen our future. But there's an opportunity there now to be harnessed, to invest. And I do think that in truth, for example, you mentioned young scientists, and I've been saying this
to my
grandkids.
Okay, someone could come up with an idea.
Yes,
but,
yes. But you're saying other children are worried, but it's not practical.
It's not practical for you at the minute.
Well, the carpooling wouldn't be, but I'm not carpooling anyway. I'm working, but I work in rural development, so it's an area that of great interest to me.
Okay, let me bring in Alan O'Reilly, who runs Carla Weather and would be an environmentalist, I think, at heart, his DNA. Alan, you had an electric car. What happened?
I had, Joe. I bought a Nissan Leaf in 2014, and it was a great car, but the range was very low on it, and it was appreciating quickly. But the biggest problem, Joe, was when I bought my electric car in 2014, the idea was the ESP, you were going to have chargers everywhere. You would go up and you would scan your fob and the electricity you
But you gave up. You went back to petrol and diesel because of lack of infrastructure. Okay, quick break.